Hi, yeah, it's Overball. And you listen to Extra Features.
Another episode of Extra Features movie podcast, movie room poop podcast, I guess we could. My name is Kevin.
I'm Simon.
I'm Daniel.
Forevermore the intern.
And on these shows, we just want people to know, as a disclaimer, we talk about the whole film, so if you haven't seen the film, skip over it, and we won't ruin it for you.
Spoilers.
Yeah, all the time, 24/7.
Yep.
So, Kev, seen anything good this week? Done anything good?
Have I seen anything good or gotten anything good? Well, I saw a great movie in the theaters last week.
Oh, cool.
I saw a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche.
Will you do the Fandango?
But it was about the lightning.
Very, very frightening to me.
Galileo.
All right. Galileo. Galileo Figaro. Bob,
can we just drop movies to Queen songs?
Will we rock you at some point?
I don't know if I could hear that.
I didn't hear it.
I heard it.
All right. Anyway, the story of Queen, starring Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury. And do you want to take away Daniel with the IMDb?
Lucy Boynton, Ben Hardy, Joseph Mazzello, Aidan Gillen, Mike Myers, Tom Hollander, and directed by Bryan Singer.
Maybe.
And Mike Myers was in it.
Yeah, I said Mike Myers.
Okay. So yeah, it was directed by Bryan Singer, sort of, because he didn't get fired from the film.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so most of the principal photography was done, and he didn't show up, and so they fired him. Sure. The movie was finished by a fellow named Dexter Fletcher. Does that ring any bells for anybody?
Nope.
No.
So Dexter Fletcher is an actor. He was in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. He was in a whole bunch of other things. The what I know for the most part is that there's an 80s movie that he did.
You saw him in The Terminal, Sherlock Gnomes.
Oh, yep. I know his face.
What's his name? Hold on, there's some kind of knocking on my wall here. Can we pause for a sec?
Yeah.
Someone has been knocking on the walls of my apartment, so I don't know what's going on. It must be someone in the downstairs part. Anyway, Dexter Fletcher was the star of The Rachel Papers. I don't know if any of you guys remember that movie.
We did the movie on the show.
That movie.
Oh. Yeah.
You made me watch it.
I did. I like that movie a lot.
I don't know.
So did I.
And he is directing Rocketman, which will be out next year, which is the Elton John documentary.
Should be good.
Or biopic, I should say. And we should clarify, too, this isn't a documentary. This is a biopic. So there's liberties taken with the story of Queen.
Pretty evidently.
Yeah. So basically, we get the story of Farouk, who was a baggage handler in London, and how he became the lead singer of Queen and reinvented himself as Freddie Mercury. And then all the things he did between basically 1970 and about 1985. And they wrap with Live Aid.
Correct.
And I don't know. I thought Remy did a great job. He looked like Freddie Mercury. He had the buck teeth. Had some of the affections. I'm not sure he quite nailed the performance, but he definitely channeled the idea of Freddie, the sense of him.
Oh, I'm 100% on board. I want to say, I think it was auto-tuned at times, it sounded like to me.
Well, he didn't sing anything, actually, in the film.
He was lip-syncing all the way through.
Oh.
He said that.
So it's actually Freddie Mercury's voice, or a very good facsimile. They had a Canadian singer who apparently hits the same notes.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay, so that's what was throwing me off then. I'm like, that's not right.
Well, I googled it, and I remember reading that they lip-synced them.
Well, that makes sense then, because I was wondering, Rami Malek sings really well at times.
And don't forget, too, they also had Brian May and Roger Taylor on set whenever they needed them to play a lick or something like that. So I think this is a fairly safe biopic, even though it has some kind of risque subject matter and that Freddie had a very bohemian lifestyle that ended up affecting him in the long run. When he contracted AIDS, but I don't think they play up a lot of that.
No, they definitely leave it dormant.
No. This well, is definitely, yeah,
there was a little mention of it, but not as much as there could have been.
No, this is definitely music focused.
Yes. I really enjoyed it.
I like the bits where they were composing songs and coming up with licks, and each came to the group with their own ideas. Which was interesting.
At first it was like each one said they wanted to do that, but then they weren't allowed to or something because Freddie wanted all the credit or something. That's what I was getting out of that.
I never got
first.
That.
Later on, they each got their own. They got their credits for it.
I think there's definitely. Some falsehoods presented in the way that was relayed. I did a little research after the fact.
Yeah.
Definitely a lot of the songs were written by Freddie. But, right. You know, like when you're talking about the Another One Bites the Dust sequence, you know, mm-hmm. John Deacon comes in with the bass line and they write the song around that. And so they each came in with their own ideas. But right. Freddie was definitely the lead singer and wrote a lot of the lyrics. And there's a bit in there where they talk about everything has to be labeled as Queen, and they shared it all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wrong in the timeline. That was presented as being around 1985. They don't actually do that until 1989. So very late in the day.
Oh. Huh.
So 4 years later. So they still what they did was they gave the writing credits to whoever primarily wrote each song. And so they would fight over who would get what songs on, you know, and Roger Taylor was so frustrated that he just did his own solo albums.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's different, but they definitely had chemistry as a band and they each enjoyed working together.
Yep.
And so I watched an interview with Freddie and he basically said, listen, a band is like a marriage. You come in and you bring your own individual things and it's a fight. You know, sometimes you got to fight for yourself, and sometimes you agree and you fight for the other person. And, you know, and in the end, if you're not getting anything out of it, then you leave. You know, and if we're still together after 13 years, it means we're still getting something out of this marriage.
Right.
So I think there was something to that. And you definitely see the chemistry in the band, even though, you know, I think John Deacon gets made fun of a lot.
He does.
Yeah. Funny note. Oh, wow. Wait, I got an echo back there. I can hear myself.
Then turn yourself down.
Okay. I have my headphones on.
No, you don't.
All right. So the kid from Jurassic Park plays John Deacon.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Timmy.
I had no idea that was him.
Yeah, I saw he was on The View, and I'm like, wait a second. That's the kid from Jurassic Park growing up.
You did not recognize him. He was terrible in Jurassic Park.
He was okay. He did his job.
Yeah, okay. He showed up.
He was a dinosaur expert.
Dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking this up. You know that, right?
Yeah.
It is Joseph Mazzello.
I think the only other complaint I had was that they restructured the timeline to present like a bookend with the Live Aid performance.
Yes.
So they make it seem like the band had broken up, Live Aid was happening, the call went out, Freddie woke up, realized he was being duped, called the band together again, they make up, and then they do Live Aid. But while they're rehearsing for Live Aid, he tells them he has HIV. And so the performance at Live Aid is like a triumph of him coming together, and he knows he's going to die, but he's going to give it all for the audience. And he does the most amazing performance ever, changes the world, and, you know, the rest we don't need to know about.
Correct.
Which, of course, is all wrong. Right? So, Freddie basically didn't get AIDS until 1987. The band was touring before Live Aid, so they left part of their tour to come to London to do Live Aid. So there was no fight. They had been severely criticized earlier in the year for playing Sun City in South Africa. And they had been in a lot of trouble for that. So the triumph of Live Aid was that people realized that they really loved the music of Queen, and they gave a hell of a performance. So, and that sequence is fantastic.
It is.
Yes.
It's letter perfect, and they did cut out Crazy Little Thing Called Love, but they did perform it. So I think there's a, you know, when they release it on home video, there'll be a longer version or some deleted scenes with that. And the reason they cut it was because they had cut a sequence where Freddie was writing that song.
Okay.
So they figured there was no payoff.
Can I discuss my issues with the movies now?
Sure.
I only have one minor nitpick that we don't learn anything else about the band. It's the Freddie story. It's not the Brian Miley story. It's not the drummer story. It's not the guitar story. It's really just the Freddie story.
Yeah, I'd agree, but I'd say that the rest were kind of dull.
Well, that's what I would, maybe that's the problem. Maybe they are dull and it's just Freddie. But even Freddie's story was okay. I enjoyed it. It's the music that propels this film, not his story.
I think they go to great lengths to say that, oh, well, Brian May was studying to be an astrophysicist, and Roger Deakin was studying to be a dentist. And they were four mates in university that made it big. But they weren't, like, they didn't really go into the excesses like Freddie did.
Yeah, maybe that's right, because at the party they leave. Okay, Freddie, good night.
Yeah, basically they were kind of dull. And I think that's why, and the other thing too, of course, is that this is a movie written by the survivors.
Yes.
So it's the, like, basically if you were to take Mary, his first wife, when he was trying to be straight, and then he came out later, you know, Brian May, Roger Taylor, and Jim Beach, the manager. I think those four people, and Jim, his later husband. I think those five people all shape the vision of Freddie that's in this film.
Absolutely, they do.
And none of them were there for the extreme parts of it. They were on the edges, and they went home, or they were out of the life, or they weren't in the life, like Jim, who came in later. I think so. I think you get this sort of... we don't really know what happened with Freddie, so we're not going to go explore the dark stuff. Or that's not the image that we want to portray.
Well, they wanted to keep his memory, like, I forget now what I was saying. Him in a good memory or something.
I agree, and there are lots of interviews right after he died when the British press went in on it, because he did not come out, ever. It was obvious he was. And you watch an interview, and he's very, very gay in his interviews. He talks about men. But he officially never, when asked if he was gay, he would give a quip or a funny joke or something like that. So
they actually showed that in like part of, there was they were trying to bait him during an interview, and he wouldn't fall for it. He sort of. Swerved around the question.
So the world knew that he was HIV positive and had AIDS the day before he died. He kept that secret.
Yeah.
You know, I think it wasn't a very well-kept secret, because if you see pictures of him the last year or so, he's very frail-looking. But I think that he kept his secrets. And I think that when all those secrets came out, the band stepped forward and said, that's not the Freddy that we knew. The Freddy we knew was a caring friend and a good supporter and a great bandmate and loved his audience and was a fantastic performer. So.
Okay.
Well, Daniel, I know someone that wanted to see it again.
Sorry?
I know someone that said they wanted to see it again.
Who was the actor?
I'm turning up my volume. So maybe that's me? I don't know.
It's Daniel's echo. Kill that echo.
I don't know. I mean, when I put in my headphones, you guys can't hear me.
Okay. Well, turn it down.
Okay, but then I can't hear you guys.
You're going to have to figure it out.
Okay. I don't know, man.
Okay. What did you think of the film, Daniel?
I didn't see it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Let's tell everybody why you didn't see the film, Daniel. What film did you sit through?
Well, I mean, my dad didn't want to see it, so I went to the Nutcracker in the Four Realms.
Ooh.
How was Nutcracker in the Four Realms? Up or down?
Very bad.
Okay. That's all I want to know. We'll get to it soon.
I've heard good things about it, but...
I heard Simon scoffing at that just now.
Oh, I would never do that. That'd be wrong.
Yes, it would be, but I heard it.
I heard it too.
Thank you.
What's next up, Kev?
Daniel, I've seen it, by the way, so you're not alone.
Yeah.
Well, I would say The Nutcracker is definitely a Bob movie.
Well, you would say that, but you'd be wrong because, like, I found fault with it.
Well, we'll get to
it. I know, but on the surface, it looks like something you'd see.
It is.
And there's like a whole dance thing in the credits too. Yeah.
Bob
loved it. What's our next film, Kevin?
Actually, no. You'd be surprised.
Next movie we'll is talk Christopher. About it later. Christopher Robin, starring Ewan McGregor and Daniel.
A bunch of voices.
Haley Atwell. One sec. Kate is Bronte Carmichael. The voices of... Where's the voices?
Well, Mark Gatiss is in it as well. As the unscrupulous boss.
Yeah, Jim Cummings, Brad Garrett, Nick Mohammed, Peter Capaldi, Toby Jones. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised about Peter Capaldi. I recognized his voice almost right away.
Yeah, he did Rabbit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So who wants to start off on this one?
Anybody? Bob, you're up.
Me? Okay. As a whole, I enjoyed it, but there were certain parts, like, I just didn't get. Him going in, who was it? The Christopher Robin going into the tree and coming out the other side. As an adult on, it wasn't believable. When Pooh comes out the other side, it's just like, I didn't find it enjoyable for some reason. But when his daughter starts saying, okay, we gotta get them to his office and, the papers, then it started becoming good. But at first, like, I just,
Yeah, I didn't really get into it until he went, like, adult Christopher Robin ran back to 100 Acre Woods. Then I thought it started becoming entertaining. But before that, it's kind of felt like a really bland biography.
Yeah.
Just, like, going through the motions. Just basic. But, like, I didn't love it as a whole at all, but, like, it was kind of nice going back to 100 Acre Wood. I made the poo a lot when I was a kid.
But, like, they also started disappearing because he started not believing it anymore, so everybody but Pooh disappeared.
I thought that was just because they were hiding.
No, not hiding. He said, I don't believe in this anymore, and... Like, they may have been hiding, but they came hiding. Back some of the time.
They thought the Heffalumps are coming, so they're hiding in the tree trunk thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
That was a very good Eeyore there. I was wrong. I'd have to say I agree with you guys. Like I wanted to like this movie, and I thought the effects on the toys were great. Yeah. But I wasn't interested. I was kind of bored by this film until the point where the daughter steps in and starts interacting. And when she does her Wimbledon bit and they start making jokes about that, I thought, those are funny. Those are on point. And this is cute. And I like this. But I didn't care up until that point.
Yeah, that's the point I started getting interested.
I've seen this before. It's kind of like Hook with Robin Williams, where he's denying that he was fun at one point.
Yes.
And I'm kind of bored by that idea. I didn't find it appealing or romantic or even interesting.
I guess.
But I did like the idea of the next generation connecting with what made the, you know.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, was that they kind of made it seem like he was the only one that saw them talking. But then later on, it's like, oh, we give up. Like, everybody sees them talking.
Yeah.
But I thought it was cute. It was fun to see the characters. But again, we've seen that kind of fish out of water interacting, you know, with the Smurfs or, you know, with other animated characters coming to a big city and having crazy adventures. It just didn't strike me as very unique. It just seemed very contrived.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we've got these characters. Let's make a movie. And we'll throw you and McGregor in it. And it actually also, the thing that really bothered me was that, so Christopher Robin was A.A. Milne's son, and he wrote these stories about his son and his toys, and he wrote these stories for him. But this is not A.A. Milne's son, Christopher Robin. This is the fictional Christopher Robin of the book grown up. So this, the whole thing is fictional. It's not like, it's all an imaginary story on every level.
Oh.
So this isn't like the story of A.A. Milne's son has grown up and he actually did have these adventures with these toys. No, this is the character from the book based on that person that has grown on. So there's no, like, he's not, the Christopher Robin of the movie is not the son of A.A. Milne's, if that makes sense.
Yeah, is that what they did with Goodbye Christopher Robin with Donnell Gleason?
That's right. That was about A.A. Milne and his son. And then later on, his son kind of denied the whole thing and didn't want anything to do with it and was kind of thrown off by his celebrity at being Christopher Robin.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't watched that one yet.
It's not bad. It's not great. It's,
oh, that one. Goodbye Christopher Robin?
Yeah. Donnell Gleason? Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm going to see that still.
Simon, what do you think?
I have to agree with everything you guys have said, surprisingly. It was painfully boring.
Wow.
Absolutely bored the crap out of me. And I was waiting for the end of this film. Okay, maybe it's going to go somewhere at the end. But no, the answer to everything is luggage.
Yeah.
Really?
They all go on holiday.
It was dumb. Absolutely painful, this film. I was watching paint dry until Kevin. I did find when they took the cab back with the kid, I found the movie perked up a bit.
Yeah.
But I just didn't get this. I'm like, this is dull.
Yeah.
And Hayley Atwell was here for a paycheck and nothing more. She had nothing to do.
I'm like, there's she went to the cottage, right?
Yeah, she went to the cottage and hung out there. I did enjoy Pooh, but I always liked Jim Cummings playing Pooh. I mean, I like the voices. I like the look, but just give me a Winnie the Pooh story. I don't need another Christopher Robin. Like, this guy must be the most depressing person on the planet. A.A. Mill, oh my God, he puts the crap out of me. That stupid movie with him and Domhnall Gleeson stunk. This movie stunk. Enough of Pooh movies. Unless it's Winnie the Pooh cartoon, I don't want to watch it.
Well, it's, you know, Disney bought Winnie the Pooh, and so they want to do something with
it. Yeah. Well, this is not
it.
So, something different.
The movie result was nothing near, like, the nostalgia I felt when, like, I first saw the trailer and, like Pooh was, like, Christopher Robin. Like, and then I saw the movie and I was like, oh, okay.
Christopher Borden.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't want to go see, like, the trailer as well. Sorry?
I based my wanting to see it on the trailer as well. Maybe I shouldn't have.
Well, don't get me wrong. I thought the animation was fantastic. I thought the characters looked flawless.
I love they blended it well.
They definitely recreate the personalities of all the characters with their actors.
Just the humans.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Ewan McGregor, I mean, whatever. He phones that for performing. I mean, I'm sure he had fun making it, but, you know, Ewan can phone in a performance if he needs to.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, he needed to just make that Obi-Wan movie.
Yeah, I don't really care.
Before he gets too old.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Come here. Let me tell you a story.
Like the lightsabers and like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I have the high ground, Obi-Wan. This ladder isn't working properly. It's because there's shelves, you idiot. All right. Next movie is Mandy. Talk about changing direction.
Thank you, Calvin.
Daniel, tell us about Mandy.
Starring Nicolas Cage, Andrea Riseborough.
Riseborough.
All right. Linus Roush, Ned Dennehy. Is that Richard?
Drake.
Yeah. And, no one really else.
Oh, Bill Duke is in it.
Oh,
look up in those
trees.
One scene, okay. The guy from The Predator. Look up in those trees.
Yeah, I was wondering where I saw him before. Okay.
Yeah. Well, all right. Who wants to kick off Mandy?
I'll start for a change.
Oh, directed by Panos Cosmatos.
Oh, yes.
What the hell did you guys make me watch? This thing is bizarre. I thought I was watching, like, Bruce Campbell and the Evil Dead things. This is just strange. The first half an hour, I'm kind of into it. The whole cult guy looks great. Then they go to take her. I'm like, I'm on board. And then it takes a weird left turn. It becomes like this battle master game, and he keeps fighting villains constantly until the end. And every action scene set and staged the same way with this weird coloring.
Yeah.
What the hell? And obviously it comes to an end.
Right.
I mean, guys, what is this? I didn't get it.
I don't know. It's like surreal and like drug infused.
It was bizarre. I think I needed to smoke some reefer before I watched this and I would have loved it.
Yeah.
Well, what's weird is that it's taken on a life, this film. I know a lot of people that love it, that just rant about it.
Yeah, like, I dug it, but I don't know if I love it yet. Like, the structure kind of reminded me of the first Mad Max, how, like, Mad Max's family gets, like, killed, and then he goes on for revenge, and then same for, like, Nicolas Cage, and, like, I kind of got into it when he was, like, sitting in the bathroom in his underwear and, like, drinking all the vodka.
Right.
Then he started to actually, like, cage rage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, there's a lot of cage rage.
Yeah, I really liked the second half, though. And then,
that's interesting. Why, you like the killing parts of it when he was getting his revenge?
Yeah, I thought the style of it worked and, like, all the weird colors. And, like, yeah, that half of it really worked for me. And yeah, I just kind of like, even the villains kind of reminded me of Mad Max. I just thought like, okay, like, I guess we're doing kind of like a drug infused Mad Max.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, all the colors, I know what you mean. It's kind of disorienting at times.
Like, it was confusing. I just found it, I did a sort of like stop storyline at that point. It just sort of becomes a narrative.
Mm.
Like, there's no talking for the fight scenes. They're just fight scene, fight scene, fight scene.
Bob, did you see this one?
Oh, he missed Mandy.
This is definitely not a Bob movie.
So Bob would have hated it.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Can I say something? I believe the movie's still at Simon's house, so it's very difficult to watch it.
I had to watch my own story. I was behind.
I'm telling you right now, you'll not like this movie.
I agree.
Knowing your choices and the things that you like.
Yeah.
I don't think I like this movie.
I don't either.
I thought it was, you're right, I'm actually, I liked the start of it. It was very 80s. It was very weird. Mandy has a weird kind of aura about her with these big humongous anime-like eyes.
Sure.
And there's, you know, I'm not quite sure what it is. And then Jeremiah, the cult leader, sees her and decides that he must have her. So he and his buddies go out and hire the local, and you know, the movies of the time have these kinds of things happening, like Class of 84 and Nukem High and all that stuff. You have these like almost like super villain style bikers. And that's what they two of them are just literally like otherworldly creatures from, I mean, they might as well come from a horror movie or something like that.
So would you describe this as a Nukem High-like movie?
No, I'm not. I'm saying like they're like characters from it, but they're not goofy or, you know, weird kind of, it's very dark, overexposed, with spotlight colors.
Yeah, definitely not a Bob movie then.
Yeah, it made me think of like Hellraiser.
A little
bit. Okay,
yeah.
I've never seen Hellraiser, but I would not like
Pinhead and the other Cenobites or whatever they're called. But the scene that really kind of got me, I'm like, what the hell is this movie? Is when she gives him they give her the cocktail of pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
Which had some kind of a bug in it or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it had in.
Yeah.
It's and
like a lost, right?
Yeah, and then he puts on a record, which I guess he recorded. So I guess he used to be a recording artist.
I think
he sucked. But his album is like folk rock or something like that nobody wanted. But he stands there, you know, like with this weird kind of golden light on him and his dick hanging out.
Yeah.
And it goes on for like 20 minutes. And I'm like, I don't need to see this guy's junk for that long. but like, what is the point of this? I mean, it's just like, was she captivated? And then they kill her.
Yeah.
I think it was because she laughed at his penis.
Well, yeah, she does laugh at him, and that leads to her dying. But, I mean, I kind of thought this was kind of like, that Nicolas Cage had to get her back.
Yeah, so no, did I.
That's what the trailer made me think. But, he just wants revenge.
Correct.
They kill her in front of him, and so he decides he has to kill him. And he doesn't. He goes out and he makes a sword.
Yep.
And he gets a crossbow or something like that.
He borrows it from his buddy and he's like, you're going to need more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it's like, okay, it's like a commando style revenge type picture, with weird stuff going on. And, he gets captured and by the drug infused weird leather creatures and takes their drugs and ends up in some weird cave under the, like, I don't know. It was weird. It was visually, it had moments like when he's looking down on the compound and I'm like, wow, this is a weird design and it's kind of funky. And I'm trying to get the geography here, but yeah, no, this movie kind of sucked.
Yeah, it's style over substance and Cage Rage.
Yeah.
It
reminds me of Suspiria.
Sure.
It reminds me of the original Suspiria, not the remake. I haven't seen the remake yet.
Oh, me neither.
Suspiria?
Yeah, I don't
like
Suspiria. Suspiria, to me, is style over substance. It's like, let's do weird designs and funny look. And actually, another thing that it reminded me of, which we haven't seen actually, is Other Side of the Wind. I started watching that on Netflix. I haven't finished it, so I can't review it. But there's a scene in Other Side of the Wind where three people are riding in a car, and this one woman in the middle decides to come on to the guy in the passenger seat. And it's shot like Mandy. It's overexposed with bright lights and like weird kind of green and red colors framing everything.
And it's visually, it's hypnotic, but there's no substance to it. Like, I don't care. I want to go watch something normal after that.
I agree, but I haven't. That was the last film I finished for the show.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're still in the cage rage, though.
I'm still in the cage rage.
Okay.
Well, hopefully the next movie muted that a bit for some others. I haven't seen it, but The Happy Time Murders?
Oh, my God, Kevin. This is... Bob, you got to take the lead. Since you wanted to do this, you can start.
I'm sorry I did, because, I saw it, and I'm going, this is terrible.
On. Starring Melissa McCarthy.
It's like the Muppets on steroids.
Melissa McCarthy is the only person I can remember in it.
Joel McHale, I think?
Yeah.
Stanley from The Office?
Maya Rudolph, Elizabeth Banks.
Oh, that's right. Maya Rudolph, Elizabeth Banks. That's probably the highlights.
Not near my computer.
Leslie David Baker.
Some of the voices from the Henson Productions are in it. Brian Henson, one of the voices.
Start with The Happy Time Murders.
Oh, gosh. This was bad. I watched it and I thought, oh, this is going to be fun. But according to what I saw in the trailers, I'm going, this will be fun to watch. And I'm going, no. Basically, Melissa and Elizabeth Maya are just there for the paychecks or whatever, because they could have done the movie without them. But I guess they needed a human cop to be on the other side, be on the movie itself. So I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way. It just didn't. I hated it. Not my type of movie,
you know,
obviously.
I think this movie is geared more to somebody like me that likes this kind of humor, very raunchy humor.
Yes.
Lots of swearing, but the film just seemed to fall flat. I did like lines like, oh, the drapes don't match the hairdo, and stuff like that. I did like the wisecracking Melissa McCarthy, but it lacking substance. I thought the sex scene in The Office, I was laughing so hard.
I thought, no, this is not for me.
The Muppet sex was totally something I would have done. That, and the Maya Rudolph trying to stop the cops from going in the room was making me laugh so hard. That was probably my favorite scene in the movie, is Muppet sex.
Mm.
I thought parts of it were good. I just felt it was
parts of it, yes, but not like, and other parts just made it a terrible movie.
I think the storyline made it a terrible movie. The storyline did not have any storyline. That was the problem. There was nothing to it.
Well, they killed the guy. No, they didn't kill the guy's brother. They killed some people in the same style as they did with the Muppet character, the main Muppet character.
Well, the problem was, it was the story. They were trying to do like a noir film, but it doesn't work because it's boring.
Yes.
I mean, they try really hard to make it work. I think they do make an effort, but it's just dull. The jokes, there's one solid joke, and I still think it's the one I went. Maya Rudolph is the star of this movie.
Yeah.
I enjoy her whenever she shows up. I find she's not there for the paycheck like everybody else. I think she does a good job. I just thought they didn't use what they had enough. It just became basic near the end.
Yes.
You know, Elizabeth Banks looked lost, but she normally looks lost to me, so I'm not surprised. So, yeah, I can't recommend The Happy Times Murders. I think I liked it more than you did.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But I like raunchy movies. I like adult humor.
Yeah.
And I have to agree, this one just didn't do it for me. I wish it was better. I really do. I think I gave it a 4.
Probably did.
I'd probably put this on if I just had friends and never seen it. I'd put it on. No problems. Because I know what I'd be getting into. I think Kevin might actually like this.
Really? I'd be surprised by that. But
I don't know. I think you should find parts of it funny.
I really don't like the Muppets, but I kind of want to
We'll probably see it eventually.
Well, I want to know what both you guys think when it happens. I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's as bad as everybody's saying it is. I've seen a lot worse. Like, it's no Mandy. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I really think the scene in the office that you're talking about, like, it's in the trailers, and I laugh every time.
And that's the best scene in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Okay, moving along.
All right, next movie is Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
Okay.
Directed by Gus Van Sant.
Oh, well, director, I do not like his films. I usually hate them.
All right. Joaquin Phoenix. Joaquin. I still don't know how to say it.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Rooney Mara. Jack Black. Gary Brownstein. Not really anyone else.
No,
Udo Kier.
Little Business? Okay. I don't remember seeing
that. Oh, yeah. Kim Gordon. Mark Wahlberg.
Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth.
Beth Ditto, yeah.
Dang. I didn't see this one, guys, so
yeah. What did you think?
Neither have I.
Yeah, do you want me to start, Simon?
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I like this one. It's about, was he quadriplegic or paraplegic?
He's a paraplegic.
Yeah.
He can use his arms.
True. And yeah, he gets in a car accident and then he's an alcoholic, so he has to find his way to sobriety. And, he finds cartoon drawing and he uses that as an outlet. And for me, it was just really well acted by Phoenix and Jonah Hill. I really like Jonah Hill's character too. And I like the story. The screenplay worked for me, and it was his cartoon drawings were funny. I really liked the one about the roses, the roses are red one, and something or thick. It was about paraplegics. I was like, yeah, but my dick doesn't work. Or whatever, however it rhymed. But yeah, I liked it.
That's it? You don't want to say any more? I felt bad that he wasn't the reason he was a quadriplegic. Jack Black walked away from the accident.
Yeah, because this is based on true stories. His name's John Callahan.
Yes.
And this just, that feels like it happens, often that, someone driving walks away from it, and then their decision affects you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I thought the story was okay. I mean, obviously it's a story of redemption in some ways.
Okay.
But I never found it interesting. I found him a bit of a dick.
Yeah. He yells at the person in the support group, right?
Well, he's always yelling at somebody. The whole film he's yelling at somebody. Even the guy that's trying to help him at his house, he's being a dick too.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just hates that he has to rely on other people now.
But I don't know if he relates. I think he's just angry at the planet, because I think he was angry before that.
Yeah, because of his mom, right?
Yeah, he just doesn't ever seem happy. And we're watching this film, and I'm kind of like, is this character going to get some redemption? And the only time he gets redemption when he starts drawing those cartoons.
Yeah, and I liked it, though, because it gave him meaning, you know? And it felt like he was wanted, and people liked reading his stuff.
But he was still a dick.
Yeah, and his cartoons are pretty offensive, right?
I thought they were offensive, but they made me laugh.
Yeah.
And I think we get to the end, and you're kind of like, okay, the guy died. Okay. Again, did this really need to be made?
I thought it had, enough powerful moments to justify it, though. Because I really liked, the one scene of Jack Black and the one scene near the end of Jonah Hill.
It
was nice.
I think that's it. I think if the acting wasn't so strong, this film would have failed.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think the acting is so good that, the script is good, but the acting brings it to a new level.
Well, Joaquin Phoenix, you definitely believe Joaquin Phoenix is John. and Jonah Hill's his character, and Jack Black is his character. And Jack Black's not playing Jack Black again. I find he's toning it down more, and it's working for me.
Yeah.
Okay, he's not playing you?
No, he's not playing me. And Rooney Mara, again, is such a chameleon in all her roles.
Hmm.
And she
I thought she was so charming, but I didn't think she got much to do.
I don't think she needed much to do. I mean, it's a pretty basic role. She's there to play his girlfriend.
Sure, and then she comes back. Okay, yeah.
But she's an airplane stewardess, so that's why we don't see her that often.
True.
And it seems as if she goes away and comes back, you see her for a bit, and has to go back to work.
I think that's when he started to, like, not be such an asshole.
Oh, like, I think he still was, but I just don't think they showed us that as much. They tried to give us a happiness to him. So at least we have redemption for the character.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, that's the way I felt. Because if not, we would have just hated him the whole movie.
I'd be curious to learn more about his life, though.
Well, like, I wanted to know more about how he got into talking. It really never touched on that.
Well, sorry?
How he became more of a motivational speaker.
Oh, true. I guess it was just because his cartoons got so successful.
But we don't know that. We know he had people like them, people hate them, they were getting popular. But why did he become a motivational speaker? To tell people his story? Because basically, to me, that's just a vehicle to tell the movie.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And we don't know if that really happened.
And I thought, like, the editing was a little bit confusing at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, because he was in group, and then, it's like, and then he was still drinking. And then that was, like, before he realized, okay, I need to stop.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was a bit confusing.
Well, it took him a long time to want to stop, though, and I think that film really hammers it home.
Yeah, because he just hated his life so much.
Yes.
And what happened.
Yeah, he was angry at everybody.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if this is a must-see for people. I thought it was less than okay. It didn't really do much for me. I love the acting, but nothing outstanding in the film.
I mean you've seen the story before, but yeah, I liked
it. Well, I think it was done better in, what movie did we review? Wine and Roses, Kevin? Is that what it's called?
What's that?
The Wine and Roses story, the alcoholism story we watched.
Oh, God, yeah, something like that.
It was Jack Lemmon, much better story. Much better movie.
Similar no, really? Topic. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, I hope they at some point catch this movie, but it's not high on my list.
He could get a minor Oscar nod. He might get a nod for Best Actor. I think it's possible.
Maybe.
Yeah, I really like Jonah Hill, though, in this. I thought he was...
And I don't think he'll get a Best Supporting nod unless they're desperate.
Oh. Yeah, like, maybe if there's 10 nominations, but maybe, probably Golden Globe for comedy.
I don't think he'll get it.
I don't know. I don't think it's on enough people's radars, maybe. But I think I liked it. I think it's good.
I don't think it's that good a film. That's the problem.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, sorry to bother you.
Oh, well, it's okay, Kevin. You're allowed to.
Don't worry.
Okay. Kevin, can you talk to me in your white voice?
What's that?
Can you talk to me in your white voice?
In my white voice?
White voice.
It's not a white voice.
What's my white voice?
You gotta listen. This is, you haven't seen Story to Bother You. It's pretty evident.
No, I haven't. Yeah.
You gotta find your white voice, right, Daniel?
Yeah, and my white voice is David Cross. Yeah, it's starring, directed by Boots Riley.
Who's
starring
an activist? Lincoln
Stanfield, Tessa Thompson, Jermaine Fowler, Omari Hardwick, Terry Crews, Danny Glover, Steven Yeun, Armie Hammer, and the white voices include David Cross, Patton Oswalt, and Lily James.
Forrest Whitaker?
Oh, yes.
Rosario Dawson is the voice in an elevator?
Oh, yeah. So you're better at this than me.
Okay. I'm just reading the plot here. Alternate version of Oakland. Cassius Green gets a telemarketing job and finds the commission-paid job is a dispiriting struggle as a black man selling to predominantly white people over the phone. That changes when a veteran ad advises him to find his white voice, and the attitude behind it makes him more appealing to customers. With a bizarrely high-pitched accent, Cassius becomes a success even as his colleagues form a union to improve their miserable jobs. Meanwhile, he finds himself promoted to power caller, selling the most morally abhorrent but lucrative products and services as the connection to his girlfriend and colleagues fades away. His conscience arises anew and he finds himself in the midst of his boss's bizarre world of condescending, bigoted decadence and his sinister plans to create the perfect subservient workforce with Cassius out. Wow. Sounds interesting.
It is very interesting, right, it's Daniel?
Very bizarre. Very bizarre.
I like this film. I think it has a very good narrative structure. I think it's very well built. I don't think anybody's wasted in the film.
No.
It has a what the fuck ending.
The most what the fuck ending
I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And you know what? It makes sense.
It might throw some people off because it takes such a risk, but for me, but it's really good.
The payoff is perfect.
Yeah.
I like it. I like how he starts off as a low level person. Until he talks to Danny Glover, and Danny Glover says, hey, you got to use your white voice. And then David Cross shows up, and he starts talking to his white voice and moves up.
Mm-hmm.
And see him talking to the Japanese guy, he sells him stuff. My favorite scene still is the elevator scene.
Oh, with
when he gets on the elevator, and he's going up to the next level, and the woman spends 10 minutes punching in the code.
Oh, right.
I was howling. And then, Kevin, he goes into the elevator like a day later, spends 10 minutes punching in the code. And it is hysterical. And then he goes upstairs, and everybody's white. Hey, where's your white voice? We only use our white voice up here. And everybody's got a different voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then he becomes the superpower caller. But at the same time, he's still friends with his girlfriend, who's an activist. She's an artist.
Uh-huh.
And that's Tessa Thompson, who just does a phenomenal job in this film. Again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she, too, is using her voice, but it's a British voice, to sell her product to white people.
Yeah, Lily James.
Lily James is her voice. And then the film escalates to the next level. He hangs out with Arnie Hammer at a party. And Arnie Hammer tells him, don't use your white voice, use your black voice. And you gotta rap. And he's like, I don't rap. He's like, hey, all black people rap. You need to rap. So he does this weird rap.
Yeah.
And then Arnie Hammer gives him a mystical cocaine of some kind.
Yeah.
And turns him into a centaur.
Okay.
Not a joke. And that's the and then it just goes from there. It's a full-on revolution. Yeah.
It's like they're trying to create horse people that could work in the factory.
And then they've offered him $10 million to run it.
To be like the people for the horses.
The leader.
And it's great, but it's very bizarre.
It is bizarre, Kevin. I loved it.
Okay.
He's freaking out because he doesn't know if what he snorted is just regular cocaine, or if it's going to turn him into one of these things.
And it turns him into one of those things.
Yeah. And that's cool.
I think my favorite scene when he's standing in front of Tessa Thompson, my second favorite scene goes, my cock bigger? Does it look bigger? Am I getting bigger? Am I turning into a horse?
Oh, with his nose?
Yes.
Yeah, true.
All right, and, Kevin, I think you would like this film. It is bizarre, though.
Okay.
I think it's good. It's not a Bob movie. I don't think Bob could handle this.
I think my favorite scene was when he was using his David Cross voice, and he was like doing like the booze, and it's like, ha, and one for my homies.
Yes.
And he pours some out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was. I kind of watch it again. I haven't watched it for a while, so that's why I'm not.
Friggin' bizarre, man, Kevin. You gotta watch this.
Okay.
This should be your double bill. You should watch this and Happy Time Murders and just snort a bunch of cocaine during it, and I think you'll be fine.
And Mandy.
Well, then follow it up with Mandy, yeah.
Yeah.
The originality, though, in this movie is, like, phenomenal.
Something different. I was so impressed with something different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You see so much of the same film over and over again.
And and you haven't seen the ending before.
You've never seen it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, folks. We ran a little bit long, so we're going to have a part two. See you there. Bye.